Welcome to the CTO Connection podcast. I'm Peter Bell, and every week I'll be sharing an interview with a top engineering leader. Firstly, I want to thank AWS, who are our exclusive ultimate partner, and without whom we couldn't run our summits or the business. AWS offers a broad set of global cloud-based products to equip technology leaders to build better and more powerful solutions. Reach out to aws-cto-program@amazon.com if you're interested in learning more about their offerings. I'd also like to thank CodeClimate, our sustaining partner. CodeClimate is now offering full access to Velocity free for 45 days to the CTO Connection community. Velocity turns data from GitHub and Bitbucket into insights that improve the visibility of engineering work so that your team can stay aligned as they adapt to a distributed workflow. Check it out at codeclimate.com/CTOConnection and use access code CTOConnection. I'd also like to thank our other sponsors, including Andela, Bugsnag, CircleCI, iTechArt, Carrot, LaunchDarkly, and Optimizely for their continued support during these difficult times. And now on with the show. Today, I'm speaking with Kai Vanderloo, the Chief Technology Officer at User Testing. Kai, thanks so much for agreeing to chat today.
Happy to.
So, obviously, you weren't always a CTO. Just very briefly, because I want to get into the meat of our discussion quickly, how did you go from being involved with code to actually running an engineering team? What was your journey?
Yeah, as you said, I was a developer for a few years at SAP in the early 90s. That was a great opportunity to learn not only to code, but also generally how software is developed, how the whole development process works. And when I got the opportunity a few years into it to build, manage a team, define a new area of the product, I jumped on that and essentially never looked back. Went from managing a team to managing managers to managing whole organizations. And over time, this has become very natural. And also my interests have shifted along the way.
Do you engage deeply with technology at all? Do you still have opinions on architecture or approaches to processes? Or are you like, hey, that's what I have a VP of engineering for?
Oh, I certainly have opinions. Obviously, I'm not well-versed in all areas of modern technology anymore, but there are some things I'm passionate about and where maybe I have some up-to-date knowledge, and then there are other areas that I just don't understand. So if a developer is unlucky and is working on an area I'm interested in, I may be poking around there. But it's not all over the board. And I don't see it as my job to be the biggest expert in anything. If I were, I've probably failed in hiring.
Absolutely. Have you noticed like changes? So you've been running engineering teams for a while now. What are the biggest changes you've noticed being a CTO over the last 10, 15 years?
I think the specialization has increased significantly over the years. There is more sophistication or complexity, whatever word you want to use. Like when I was developing back in the days as a developer at SAP, not only did you support the whole life cycle, like we did the product management work, we did the development work, we did a lot of the testing ourselves, and tested each other's software, so you were involved along the whole life cycle, but you were also working across the whole stack. You did everything from the data model that would get implemented in the database to the UI development. And so I think we were much broader and had a very holistic view on things, while many developers today are clearly focused on one phase of the life cycle, so the development or the QA engineers or whatever it is, and they are often specialized on certain technologies. There's a much broader range of technologies. While we may have had relational databases and file stores to work with, nowadays you have all kinds of data storage technology. And so I think the specialization has increased considerably.
That makes sense. So to dig into today's topic, kind of programming in a pandemic, right? The changes that have occurred in engineering organizations over the last couple of months. From what I understand, you started off in a fairly good place, 3 to 4 major offices, a good minority of your employees not in an office. With that, what did you find the changes in your working experience when we started sheltering in place?
We had some changes leading up to the pandemic that ended up being very fortunate for us. One thing I noticed when I joined user testing a bit more than a year ago was that the team was very good at working remotely. As you know, we had somewhere between a third and half of our engineers were working from home already. So people were very used to working in a distributed fashion. Lots of video conferencing going on, many phone calls, lots of interaction in that way. What we were less good at was working across time zones. We were entirely US-based back then. And since then, we have opened an office in Edinburgh, in Scotland. We've made an acquisition in Oslo, in Norway. So we've gone from a relatively compact US 4 time zones model to a much more distributed model. We're now including 10 time zones, including Norway. So it has changed that aspect of it. And what we did to kind of prepare for that, and which I think is a best practice anyway, is to try to support more of the asynchronous collaboration. So you manage the workflows in a tool. We used Jira and Confluence for that. So we moved away from Trello to more to Jira and Confluence to get a more complete documentation of the backlog and everything that needs to get done, and better tracking of what's going on, better documentation. We started making a habit out of documenting every decision, every proposal. So we were set up pretty well for asynchronous collaboration, which I think is best practice in engineering nowadays anyway. Even if I only had 4 or 5 people in an office, I would still want us to write things down. And obviously, it is a great starting point for the situation we're in now. So that was a bit of the backstory. So as the pandemic hit and we shut our offices down, I think it is 8 weeks ago now, we closed all offices and decided everybody's going to work from home. The product and engineering organization was pretty well prepared. All of us were used to documenting things. We're used to having to jump on video conferences quite frequently. So there have been significant changes to some people's lives because of this, but I think a lot of the collaboration, a lot of the how we work has not been so severely impacted.
Now, just to understand the structure, because there's so many ways of dealing with a wide range of time zones, right? And one of the patterns that you see sometimes is that you just simply have different teams in different time zones so that you minimize the number of people who have to stay early or come late to be able to have a call to synchronize. Did you do that? Were the Oslo and Edinburgh teams working on different facets of the product, or did you really have to have them collaborating closely with the rest of the engineering org?
We have a little bit of geographical specialization, but not a whole lot. And it wasn't really by design. We gave up on that thought relatively early and said, we're going to hire expertise where we can find it. And then we're going to put that expertise to work where it makes the most sense on the projects, on the squads that where it's needed the most. So it is very collaboration intensive, cross time zone collaboration intensive.
And is anyone working off hours to make that work? Or do you have, because what you don't actually, do you have any shared hours between Oslo and the West Coast? Was that 9-hour time difference?
It's a 9-hour time difference. So there are a few shared hours, especially early. The Oslo office is the result of an acquisition. And the first few weeks after the acquisition, I'd get up at 3 or 4 in the morning to extend the overlap with the team in Oslo and work on their in their working hours. And the most of us have been in similar situations before. I mean, most people here on the West Coast have been working in international companies before. I certainly have. I spent 10 years working for SAP out here on the West Coast. So heavy center of gravity in Germany. So early mornings feels pretty normal. And the folks in Edinburgh have been great in staying a little later than maybe 9 to 5 working hours would suggest. So I think we're all accommodating a little, but nothing too crazy.
Right. You don't have people working the night shift in one country to make it work in the other.
And that's why I think that asynchronous collaboration is so important, that we're actually writing things down. We use tools to drive the workflow. We don't rely that much on the synchronous, the ability to talk to each other.
So that's really interesting, because one of the things that people who are new to this, right, there are some people where they just had 50 people in an office and suddenly everyone's locked at home and they're not quite as sure what to do about it, though presumably by now they're figuring it out. How do you deal with one of the things that I often got as pushback, because I was always a fan of remote work and built a remote first team for my last company. Whenever I did that, the pushback was, I was like, yeah, but you can't collaborate in the same way as like being in the same room. So when you're doing those brainstorming, when you're doing those ideation sessions, how do you manage that in a way that still works, firstly, across geographic locations, and then secondly, across time zones?
What we've found is that good preparation and a bit of a methodology that everybody understands before you start brainstorming, that if you know you're going to use a few phases to the brainstorming and then somebody's going to be responsible for doing the synthesis and you have a proper tool in place for it and you have some pre-reading materials that people can study in advance, it seems to be working very well. I could argue that some of our brainstorming actually has gotten better these last few weeks with more structure to it. And it instead of just standing up in front of a whiteboard and go crazy, you have somebody prepare a brainstorming session. You have them actually coach the attendees a little bit on the methodology and what we're trying to achieve. You have time-boxed phases. I think we've been doing pretty well on that as well.
And that's interesting, too, because another thing I've heard is that some introverts and some other like populations within engineering teams are actually feeling more empowered by the fact that, you know, everyone's the same size on a Zoom call, rather than being perhaps a little more intimidated about speaking up in a big, big boardroom setting.
Yeah, that is certainly happening. And I've gotten very positive feedback from the people who were working from home before this all started, that they feel more on an equal footing now that everyone is working from home. And that may be also a positive outcome of it. And plus, again, I think the asynchronous collaboration where you write things down, and even if it's a brainstorming session now, we have like little cards in Mural where you can type your things on. It doesn't require that you speak up in front of other people and in front of very senior participants the same way. It's not intimidating the same way.
Yeah. Is there a particular tool that you've used and you recommend, or it's just like go Google for something?
Yeah. We use Mural for a lot for the brainstorming, and it's working very well for us. I don't think we did any particularly deep evaluation of tools though, so I'm not going to sit here and recommend people, but it works for us and we're very happy with it.
I feel like one of the things that you touched on there, which is it's more explicit, right? You have more structure to it. There's pre-notes, there are structures. It seems to me that one of the generalized rules about remote work and making it successful is that you need to be more explicit, right? When you're in an office with people, you can tell if they're looking sad and you go up to them and you just have a coffee with them and see what's going on. Whereas if you've got a remote team, you really need like the daily stand-up. You look at them and you have to break out those weekly one-on-ones and spend the time to make sure your team is productive and motivated. Are there other things that you find that you're perhaps being more explicit about now that everyone is working from home?
You touched on something very important, which is looking after the people who may need it the most. The ones who raise their hands and complain and say, I'm not doing well, that's easy. They're the ones we can go help. We can we can deal with those situations. We have a few people I'm a bit more concerned about that don't say anything and that may be overworking themselves or maybe stressing out over the current situation for any kind of reason. And we've made a point out of trying to think through in my management team, who should we reach out to, like who may benefit from a bit of extra attention, and then actively just reach out, talk to them. That may be people who've had to change their plans for the summer or something and feel very bad about that. People with particularly difficult family situations, maybe people living alone in a small apartment somewhere, not going out much, where maybe the office was a big part of the social life and now that part is gone. So everybody's situation is different, and I think you need to be a little bit more proactive, as you said.
Well, it's interesting. It almost feels that during the pandemic, we've got this bifurcated workforce where there's like a certain subset of the population, typically with young kids at home or something similar, and they're like, I can barely get my work done at all because now I'm a teacher as well as everything else. And, you know, they're like done by 5 p.m. because maybe their partner's been taking the kids and they have to take over and do bed and bath time and dinner and stuff like that. And then you've got the other group who are basically like, I'm locked in these four walls without another human. I should just work 100-hour weeks because what else do I have to do? Are you seeing that? And then are you finding strategies that are helping with each one of those two kind of populations?
We are certainly seeing that. And the key strategy to handle all of this, I think, is flexibility, to really give each individual as much flexibility as possible so that they can work the number of hours that they are able to, that they can work these hours at the time of day that works for them. So my own pattern has changed a lot. I stay up in the evenings and do work at night, and I get up early in the morning to try to free up a little bit of the daytime so I can be with my son and teach him and help him with his schoolwork, which I never did before. Like, my work day was continuous from 8 to 6 or whatever it was. And now it's spreading out a little, but everybody's situation is different. And I think, again, you need some flexibility, but you also need to be proactively reaching out to people. And maybe as leaders, we need to set good positive examples, like take a day off and tell everybody I'm taking a day off to just recharge and get some things done around the house that getting annoying otherwise, and whatever it is, and we just show people this is okay. And again, I don't believe in this idea that, oh, Friday we're going to shut the whole company down, so everybody now start looking forward to Friday, please, and then you're going to really enjoy having a day off on Friday. Because for some people it may be hell to have Friday off. It may be the least useful day. So we're trying to do this. Some of our teams have taken a day off. They've decided maybe after delivery or just some point in time that worked well for the team, the whole team took a day off, and it's great because suddenly your message volume drops by 90% anyway, and you can safely ignore the other 10% when the rest of the team is off. But we've been trying to be very flexible about this.
And I think that's really the heart of a lot of this is when you talk about flexibility. It's interesting because I have seen companies do company days off, and I don't think it's wrong. It's interesting. It's whatever works for your team and your org. And I think especially the smaller the team is, you might be in a position where if you've only got a 15 or 20 person startup, it's probably much more straightforward to find a day that works for everyone. But when you look at the historic research on this, pretty much everyone will take floating days over, you know, a particular Monday being guaranteed as the holiday, right?
Absolutely. And that's what we've been trying to do. And also flexibility with the kind of work people commit to. And at the same time, we still have to uphold some standards. If you commit to getting something done, other people now depend on it. So you better find a way to get it done. But maybe we'll try to encourage people to be a little bit more considerate about what they pick up in the first place, what they commit to doing. And if for some reason they can't meet their commitment, just say something early on. you're going to find someone who's willing to help you if you say it early enough.
And now, some exclusive offers for my partners. Amazon Web Services offers a broad set of global cloud-based products to equip technology leaders to build better and more powerful solutions. Partnering with CTO Connection, AWS is now offering an exclusive program to our listeners. The program includes up to $100,000 of AWS credits, a free consulting session with an AWS solution architect to review your environment, your strategies, and optimize your costs, and other resources to help you to get started on migrating to AWS. If you're interested in learning more, please reach out to aws-cto-program@amazon.com. To lend a hand to those ramping up remote engineering processes, CodeClimate is offering the CTO Connection community 45 days of full access to their engineering analytics application, no strings attached. Velocity turns SCM data into actionable insights so leaders can get visibility into the speed, capacity, and output of their newly distributed teams. Your 45-day package will include access to the full capabilities of the Velocity Professional package, a consultation with a product specialist who will map your key initiatives to data, and a training session for engineering managers and executives about how to interpret and apply this data in a way that engenders trust. CodeClimate hopes that this will equip engineering leadership to take on a new set of challenges in the weeks ahead. To request access, head to codeclimate.com/CTOConnection and use the code CTOConnection. When was the first time you actually started managing either a remote or distributed team?
It was the first time I started managing at all. I had moved from Germany to the US in 1996 to build a development team here at SAP. It was the first application development team ever outside of Germany. So we had our center of gravity back in Germany. So it's been natural for me for as long as I've been managing people or teams.
And then was there a particular point in your career where work from home and remote first became more common as opposed to the first step, which is distributed?
Yes. And that was, I'd say, in my first startup to some extent in the mid-2000s, where we had some relatively specialized technology skills needs. And just for hiring reasons, we had to accept that people just could work from anywhere. And we had some senior people who wanted to move to some other place in the country. And it just seemed easier to keep them on and enable them to work from home than to try to replace them. So I think it has a lot to do with skills. And today at user testing, we've had this very remote friendly culture as a competitive advantage in hiring, that we can attract skills in locations where nobody would think of setting up a development office, but for some reason, somebody who has these skills is living there.
It's pretty amazing. I'm almost slightly disappointed that work remote first and work from home is becoming so ubiquitous, because it used to be, it was great whenever I had a new startup idea, I'd reach out to friends, you know, like in some kind of weird ass part of Texas or like way up in North Dakota or some other place where there was absolutely no competition at all. And you were getting some of the best developers in the country and in the world.
Yeah.
If you were to talk, imagine if you were mentoring somebody, maybe they've got, you know, 50, 80 person engineering org, but they've never, for whatever reason, they've always just had a CEO maybe who was 100%. We don't hire outside of the office. It's got to be in one room. What are some of the things you would recommend that they do or pay attention to make remote not just something that people are getting by with, but that's something that's going to be sustainable, given that we may not all be going back into an office for a little while?
I would start with what I consider engineering best practices anyway, and I've said it a few times now, you have to write things down. You have to properly document your thoughts leading up to decisions. You properly document decisions. You work a lot in an asynchronous mode. And then when you get together, you prepare every meeting. There's an agenda. There are desired outcomes. And it's so easy to do these days. Like, we use Confluence for all our documentation and everything. And they have nice little templates I don't know if we built them or if they come with the package, but like for every meeting, there is a, what's the structure? Who are the participants? What's the agenda? What are the desired outcomes? And then what decisions were made? What action items came out of it? You've got tools for all of this these days. So just think through how you want this to work and never underestimate the value of writing things down, because people also tend to think things through better. And I think with that, you've come a pretty long way to make this distributed work meaningful.
Do you also find that metrics are a useful tool? Like, do you play with your cycle time on pull requests? Like, do you use anything like that? Not as a, like, how many lines of code did you write today, right? But more in terms of, oh, wait a second, cycle time's doubled for merging in PRs in this team. Maybe we should see if they're getting blocked by something.
We have some of those metrics, cycle times, wait times, how long an issue sits and waits to be picked up. We have just number of issues resolved, which I think is a pretty good metric to see what's going on. And interestingly enough, all of these metrics have improved since the lockdown started. So there certainly seems to be some benefit to working from home. And we're 8 weeks into it now. So And this line is relatively flat. There's a bit of a step function productivity, if you want to use that word. I don't know if these are good metrics of productivity, but whatever it is we're measuring has improved. And it improved relatively quickly and then has stayed at this higher level. I don't know if it is sustainable for much longer time, but so far it's been sustainable for 8 weeks.
That's actually really interesting that it was an initial step function rather than a slow climb up or something a little noisier. So you just saw this immediate boost. And what you say, it was what, in the first week or two that you kind of saw that boost?
Yes. After about a week, most of these metrics had improved by about 25%. So that's a significant improvement.
Yeah. Do you have any hypotheses around what's doing it? Is it just the flexibility to work when people want? Is it the fact that they're getting their hour and a half of commute every day back? Like, what do you think's driving that?
It could be all of the above. I think those are all factors that contribute to this. And maybe an increased sense of urgency. Maybe when you work, you are more focused. I don't know. I'm not a psychologist. I can look at the metric. We're trying to make life as easy for people as possible so that we try to make what is good for us in the long term. And I'm more interested in keeping people healthy, making sure nobody burns out over this. So we've been trying to communicate that when we started noticing that these numbers are looking very good, like just to make sure that this is not because people work all night. So we're trying to communicate to people that they really need to look after themselves as well. And we're trying to do the same.
And for the longer term, because I mean, also the first thing I think is that a lot of people, this is the hardest possible way to do it, right? I see people who've never done remote work before, and they're like, well, I don't know how you did it for all the years. And it's like, well, guess what? I didn't have the kid at home. I was able to go out of the house. I was able to buy toilet paper at a grocery store without waiting in line. It's like life was fundamentally easier. And now you're conflating a lot of that with working from home. And it's not the same thing. Firstly, have you found that there's anything that as an organization, you just don't do that maybe it seemed like natural to do when you were in an office, but you've just stopped doing and not missed? Was there any like waste there?
I think because we had a relatively large portion of remote employees, there wasn't a whole lot of waste created by being in an office. And we've taken things that happened in offices, like happy hours and things, we've moved all of that online. We're doing a lot of social time. As we've been talking to our employees and surveying our employees about what means the most to them, it turned out that he's having kind of social activities online, having somebody lead a yoga session every now and then, having other things like that available, were very meaningful to a lot of people. And those were the most common answers we got when we asked people, what can the company do for you? Is kind of just provide some things like that. And up to the point where today somebody was complaining that it's getting too much between the gardening and the sourdough bread baking and whatever it is. All these workshops we have online now, that it's getting so much, people are now getting stressed out about all these social activities that are being offered.
Now I've got to get my yoga in. I still have to get the bread to raise, and I haven't shipped the PR.
Exactly. So it's, and you have to do that before you go out and prune your bushes in your garden because somebody's going to come inspect them on video tomorrow. So there is a lot of that going on, but I think people are going to learn to live with that as well, to kind of really, again, flexibility is key here. I think it's great for the company to offer these things. Something we've done as well, we kind of find a lot of interesting offers where you hold an online class, but people get shipped kits in advance. So apparently we had already done some mixology classes. I think it was not for employees. It was for customers or some of our partners, where it was like a mixology class. You get a mixology kit shipped to you, and then you have a professional mixologist lead a session. And we're doing something like that with watercolor painting now. So people sign up, and then they have a watercolor kit sent to them, and then an artist takes us through how to create the watercolor. And then you end up at the end of that with a little painting you've made. So there is a physical aspect to it as well, which may be a nice sense of normalcy these days, where everything suddenly is online, and actually having a little bit of this physical aspect is maybe helpful as well.
Definitely. That's actually a great idea. And then how do you see this? I feel like there are two phases to the next step, right? There's the shelter in place for however long it lasts in a particular location. Then there's the figuring out what returning to work looks like. And then there's some point in the future, vaccine, hopefully, and that this is not a primary consideration anymore. Do you have any thoughts for, I mean, like, are you going to be in a rush to get people back into the office? Like, how are you thinking about that second phase, and then going into the third, and what might be different?
As a company, we have started thinking about this and trying to plan for what is it going to look like when people go back to the office. That doesn't mean that we think it's going to happen anytime soon, but there may be significant changes in people's attitudes towards going to the office at all, in expectations of what does an office look like, what you actually do when you're in the office. And as our product and engineering organization, we're in the fortunate position, as I mentioned, that we've kept our productivity up. So there is certainly no, from a company perspective, big desire to get people back into the office. We can continue like this. If this is sustainable, we can continue like this for a long time. But some individuals may be very interested in going to an office again. Some individuals may be less interested. Maybe they're really settling into this whole thing of working from home. So I think work as we know it, at least in our professions, is going to change. That maybe it's more focused time together in the office. On the other hand, you probably don't want to have five people standing in front of a whiteboard and getting excited and yelling at each other. So the things are going to be different. And we're trying to understand people's attitudes now. And as we've started having these discussions with the teams, again, everybody's situation is different. Some people say, for me, the big determining factor when I can go back to an office is childcare. When can somebody else take care of my children? When will they be going to school again? When will daycare open again? And for other people, it may be considerations around commuting. They don't want to get on public transport. And it's just so different. And we have to, as a company, we have to think all of this through. We have to understand all these different aspects so that when we start opening offices again, we do it in a way that is attractive to the employees and that actually lets people work and do good work and feel safe about it.
That makes perfect sense. So, Kai, thank you so much for taking the time to talk today.
Thanks, Peter.
This episode was produced by the amazing team over at Dante 32, a podcast production agency focusing on content strategy, audio production, and distribution. Check them out at dante32.com. And if you'd like to receive new episodes as they're published, please subscribe in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving a review in Apple Podcasts. It really helps others to find the show. Thank you.